Hi, I'm Kobe Odom, and I'm dreaming in the nightmare with Kelly and Jeremiah. Bam.
Kobe Odom was born on the Ivory Coast and lived partly in Ghana.
He came to London at the age of six and, like most kids his age, dreamed of becoming a footballer.
Unlike most kids, however, he secretly dreamed of becoming a poet or a writer.
After getting a BA in sociology and media studies, he pursued his passion for storytelling at London Film School, an experience which he says changed his life.
While at film school, he directed three short films, Deborah's Letter, Closure, and Housegirl. Deborah's Letter, about his own family, won the Audience Favourite Award at Austin.
After graduating from film school in 2017, Kobe made another short film, Haircut, centred on a Jamaican barber in South London.
A piece of work that earned him the accolade Star of Tomorrow.
More directing jobs followed, including a mini-series about systemic racism called Unsaid Stories for ITV.
And then BBC TV came calling with an adaptation of Mallory Blackman's novel, Noughts and Crosses.
Sounds like all of his dreams came true without a hitch, right? Let's find out.
Hi, I'm Kelly Okogu. I'm a well-being coach, consultant, and talent manager.
And I'm Jeremiah Emanuel, entrepreneur, activist, and the author of the book, Dreaming in a Nightmare.
And this is Dreaming in a Nightmare, a chance to meet remarkable people who always imagined getting somewhere in life.
Even when life didn't seem set up to help them get anywhere.
Welcome to Dreaming in a Nightmare, Kobe, and thank you for coming on. And, you know, it's been wonderful to, first and foremost, know you in the personal and to bring it here. You know, it's great to be on a platform like this and speaking about real life things that we speak about. So my first question for you is, what did you dream about when you were a kid? What did you dream about becoming when you were a kid?
All right, so the first one was the obvious one that we all dream about, which is being a footballer. You know, when you're in like secondary school, I saw my name in lights. Trust me, I was that centre mid. You know, I was going to be the Roy Keane or Vieira of the team. But yeah, that didn't last. At 15, that was literally it. You know, like I you know, couldn't really run that much anymore. You know, the usual knee injury that we all have that, girls love roasting us about. You know what I mean? Like, I genuinely, you know, realized that football wasn't the thing at that time, because also I realized I wasn't that passionate about it. I think it was just more the glitz and the glamour and not living the life I was currently living that was the, you know, the thing that I wanted as opposed to football, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, that was my first dream. I wanted to be a footballer. And then after that, I used to tell my mum, almost every month, I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire. I'm going to be a millionaire. I don't know why I said it, but I just kept saying it. Like, look, I know we're going through hardship right now, but something in my spirit was just told me I'm going to be a millionaire, man. So, and you know, that wasn't my second dream. So first dream was football and the second dream was a millionaire, which God willing, I'm still on course for. So,
yeah. No, definitely. I feel like 15 is that sort of age for a lot of like young boys, mm-hmm. where it's either like I'm gonna continue pursuing this football thing, mm-hmm. or I'm gonna like do something different now. Mm-hmm. So yeah, literally the exact same thing for like me and my friends.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I think at that time as well, it was kind of like, you know, year 10 going into year 11 or whatever, or was it year 9? I forgot I'm old now, so I forgot the I forgot all that stuff. But I think it's sort of like at that time, football was what distracts you from hanging around with the wrong people. But, you know, unfortunately, obviously, you know, like you were saying as well, you know, we come up in areas where people can literally vanish overnight for whatever reason. Do you get what I mean? And I think that for me, I went through the exact same trajectory of, you know, just, you know, my friendship group and friendship circle was about, you know, I speak about it with my friends now, you know, some of my friends that, you know, sort of like made it on the other side. Unscratched, should I say, and even though that's a very vague term, but you know, we speak about it, we just can't believe the kind of things that we discuss, you know, the kind of stuff that happened back then, if you know what I mean. It's sort of like, what is that? We're like whole new human beings trying to comprehend, you know, things that we actually went through, but it feels like it was somebody else that went through that, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of like, you know, our dreams literally pulled us through all of that craziness, if you know what I mean. It sort of like dragged us through spiritually, physically, mentally, psychologically, the whole lot, you know. And I thought that, you know, at that time, we can look at that as a nightmare, but I'll be honest with you, those times, those days that I'll never forget, that makes me who I am today. There's times back then that I laughed more than I've ever laughed in my life, if you know what I mean. You know, there's, you know, it's like for me, back then was a dream and a nightmare. And to be fair, I could say I'm in a dream now, but there's parts that if I share with people, call a nightmare. So I think it's really about perspective sometimes. And, you know, that's one of the, you know, that's where I am now. That's the point where I'm at mentally with all this, if you know what I mean. It's sort of like, it's all really just what you want it to be.
I think you touched on a really good point there. And it's sort of the basis of the phrase dreaming in a nightmare. And the nightmare for me, I wouldn't say growing up in Brixton was a nightmare. Being around my friends was a nightmare. Even as you rightly said, the things that you went through were a nightmare. To me, it was the realization one day that my reality and the reality of many other people can be seen as a nightmare to those who can't relate to it. So it's almost like you might like have a conversation with someone like you literally just mentioned, and to you, it might be like your day-to-day reality. To them, it's seen as like a complete nightmare. And it continues as well. So even leading up to my next question, up to this point in your life, what has been your biggest nightmare? Maybe a moment when you just wanted to wake up in a different time and place?
Well, no, my mum passed away. She passed away in 2018, July. The end of July, and to be honest, my life just hasn't been the same since. You know what I mean? It's in good and bad ways, don't get me wrong, like it's not just negative, but it was definitely a nightmare. You know, sort of like I'd never experienced grief in my life, and that the first person you experience that with is your mum. And I was a mummy's boy. It wasn't like we had issues, and you know, obviously everyone has issues with their parents, but you know, it wasn't like we're distant. You know what I mean? It's like that was the closest person that I have and still have, if you know what I mean. It's not like it's past tense. Like, mum is still the closest person to me. I could feel her everywhere, if you know what I mean. But that was the nightmare. That was, that. If you want me to be honest with you, I believe that was the lowest point of my whole life thus far. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think I've been lower than that, you know. So that is the easy answer. Logic for me, I've realized, is what human beings have used for survival and for, you know, for progress and to stay above water. Whereas we don't need to do that ourselves when we've got Christ, you feel me? And I feel like from going into that word of God, what I've realized is a lot of the things that I grew up on, things that I used to survive, right? Excellence, you need to flip all of that on its head. And that includes death. Like the way I perceive death for me is not death that is, wow, we're never going to see this person again. Death is death to sin. It's death to the body. Do you see what I'm saying to you? It's death to the flesh that our spirit is within, if you know what I mean. And actually, you know, without the flesh, there is no sin. Do you get what I mean? So if you want me to be honest with you, the person that you guys see now, you know, if I've got some nice things, sitting in Cape Town, working on a BBC One show, and my mum's never seen this version in the flesh. Do you get what I mean? Like before she passed away, she hadn't seen any of this. The car that I drive, the whatever I want to, you know, attribute, you know, my progress and success with, you know, even the person that I am, you know, being patient and all that kind of stuff, she's never seen it. But it's no coincidence that all of those things kicked off when she left. You know what I'm saying to you? Why? Because she's sitting in heaven as an advocate. You get what I'm saying to you? So I could look at this situation as the worst nightmare ever, but you know, it says that, you know, all things work together for the good of the Lord, and God knows what he's doing. Like, I can't challenge God. Like, he like, mum belongs to God. You get what I mean? He's decided to call her back. And actually, there's two things that he's done here. Not only has he clarified exactly why she had to go down to the T, like, there's no even words to describe what he said to me or how he's revealed this to me, but my spirit is at one in peace with that decision. But also, he said that he's going to take my pain away, and he's done that times 10, if you want me to be honest with you. So, you know, it's like fair enough, I can call that my worst nightmare, but can I be real with you? Like, mom going to heaven is one of the biggest blessings I've received to date. Like, I can't even describe it. Do you know what I'm saying? She, like, all my family are good. My nephews are good. My life is good. The bad people, not bad people, but the friends that I shouldn't have as friends have excused themselves. You know what I mean? It's like a proper purging process where God has now, you know, left me as the man that he wants me to be, and I'm going to benefit from that and everybody else around me, you know? So I think that, honestly speaking, like, that was the biggest nightmare for me, but God has shown me the dream within that. You see what I'm saying to you? That's why I said dreaming within a nightmare. That's why, like, bruv, this, the premise of this is perfect. You know what I mean? Bro,
definitely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for sharing that, bro. I think grief is a thing as well that we're not really prepared for, especially from like a young age. It's just something that a lot of people rarely think about. Like, at the end of the day, it's something that will happen to like each and every single one of us, but we're just not taught how to like deal with it. So thank you so much for like sharing that and talking about how you got through everything. And I love the fact that you mentioned that that nightmare became something else, that it was no longer labeled a nightmare. And I think that's really important for the listeners. I think the other thing that sort of comes to mind is, what was it like for you starting out in film? And we sort of read that you wrote poetry in school. So yeah, even to like learn about that, basically.
You're trying to go all the way back. I was going to start from like 18. You know what? It was interesting because it's like, I did write poetry in school, but I was ashamed of it. You know what I mean? Again, when you're in our society, that's not the coolest thing to do. And the man them aren't going to say, yeah, you're cool for writing poems. And you know what I mean? So it's a bit of a secret. Yeah. I can't lie. Like, I did it in school, but it was in the anthology books that goes around different schools. It didn't go online or... You know what I mean? None of the man them could get a hold of it and say, yo, like, this poem, sick. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, I did write poetry. And you know what? I was really good at it in hindsight. And it was my mom that highlighted that aspect of me. Because my mom was really literary based. She loved books. She loved writing. She loved reading. And she loved films, funny enough. So it's interesting. So from then, it's funny you actually go that far back, Jeremiah, because, you know, I've been doing a lot of reflecting recently. And one thing I can say is the man that I am today, career and personally, is a direct culmination of every single last thing I've been through. Whether it's a course I've studied somewhere, whether it's a book that I've read, whether it's the friends that I have, if you know what I mean. It's like literally the type of filmmaker I am today is heavily based on what I've been through educationally and other things. So like you said, poems at school. Then from school, I moved on to college and I studied media studies, sociology, business studies and RE. Right. And I found that media studies came the most naturally to me, the practical side anyway, not the theory side, because I found it boring. But, you know, that's when I picked up a camera for the first time, was in Christ the King College when I was in media studies and I was with Afolabi, Afolabi, the comedian, was in the same media class, same group. So we was doing this thing where he was walking around telling jokes. I was recording it. And I remember I went in the edit suite in Christ the King and I got obsessed. I was just, you know, raw, like, this is so much. But before that, what I used to do is, this was low key as well, like, I don't know, the man didn't really knew it, but you know those productions people used to do back in the day with like all the street names and stuff that you do, like the I used to actually design those on my computer and I used to get obsessed with it, but I never really showed nobody. So I was making little ones for like the man them and the block and that there to go around MSN. So like I had that technical side of me, which I found second nature, that I loved to, like, I was feeding my spirit with it. And that obviously transferred into editing, because it's the same thing as image manipulation. You see what I'm saying? Like, I got into that. I got obsessed with it. And then obviously I studied sociology and I ate sociology. I got full marks in my synopsis paper in college. But, you know, it's kind of like I found something which I didn't really like, but I was good at. You see what I'm saying? It's sort of like, you know, I was learning about society and family structures and all of that kind of stuff. And then moving on from that, I went to my careers advisor at Christ the King. And then he just said, I need to get a course that blends in the media and the sociology and do that. So I went to Brunel University and I studied communication and media, which was nothing like what I wanted to do. It was just sociology, basically, with one module of like shooting, like, you know, camera stuff. I'm sure Kelly can attest to this. So it's like, you know, but while I was at uni, I used my student loan and stuff to buy a laptop, a MacBook. So I bought my first MacBook and then I invested in the camera. to a DSLR. So what I started doing was shooting stuff like commercials, music videos, you know. And I have a friend called Raheem Bakari that, you know, I met when I was super young. And he's sort of like, he's a singer. He does everything, to be fair. He's an all-rounder. And, you know, I kind of, he was like my benchmark. He was like my friend who, with the friendly competition and learning from each other and sort of going on this journey. So we started doing a lot of those things together. Like, we started shooting a lot together. And cut a long story short, when I was at uni, I just realized that, look, there's nothing that I think about more than this stuff. You know what I mean? Like, this, you know, there's my safe space. It's where I go when I'm not depressed. You know what I mean? Because I, you know, I grew up quite depressive. You know, I was quite negative and stuff mentally, not in my presentation. But when I was doing this stuff, it was second nature to me. You know what I mean? Like, it felt like the thing that I need to and want to do. So when I finished uni, you know, I used to get in all kinds of trouble, to be fair. Like, you know, without going too deeply into that. I was, you know, sort of like lost a little bit after I finished uni. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I did another course in Brunel, a master's course, which was advanced multimedia design, which is not what I wanted to do at all. It was like sort of like 3D design. And I was around all these really techie geeks making cities and stuff. And I just had one ball that, you know, I clicked on and stuff. So I just packed that in. I was just messing around in uni. I didn't go back to lectures. And then I was working at Vodafone for a while. And you know what? Something really brilliant happened to me, because a lot of nonsense that I was doing when I was younger, I packed it in. It was a pact of me and God. I got to a place of God where I said, you know what? I'm going to rely entirely upon you, because I'm kind of lost. You know what I mean? Like, I'm relying on my own strength and might and what I think, you know, is good and stuff like that. And I wasn't just qualified to rely on myself. So I was working at Vodafone, and then something happened. So there's a book that Raheem gave me. I was reading a book on film lighting, and in this book, because I wanted to be a DOP. So I wasn't a director at this point. I was a DOP, a director of photography, which is the camera guy that the director works with and in charge of lighting and stuff. So I was reading a book, and then there's a DOP in the book called Alan Davial, who shot E.T. with Spielberg. And he wrote a quote in there, which I actually found again recently. And he said, "The day you get to work and you're not scared anymore is the end of your career." Right. So I was thinking, wow, like what a statement kind of thing. So I tweeted about this. This was like 2011/2012. I was 21, 22. I tweeted about it. Then these random people on Twitter, God knows how they found this, right, because responded to me and said, yeah, that's great. Alan Davial is actually going to be at this conference in LA kind of thing. You should come. I was thinking, rah, swear done. So at that time, like I said, I was lost, boy. You know what I mean? I had a bit of money knocking around, and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go. I called on loads of people that do what I do. As usual, they were, you know, saying, yeah, I'm on it. And when it came to the crunch time to book, everyone's like, oh, yeah, I've got to buy my dog and I need to fly to Mars. And I was like, you know what? Just do whatever you want. You know what I mean? And I just went by myself. I went by my Scott self, you know, and just went, because I was just obsessed with this thing. I didn't know what it was. I wasn't a director at this point again. I was just obsessed with this world of whatever. You know what I mean? So I went there. My dad helped me out as well. And that's when I knew that I should do this, when my parents came on board and they saw this guy is finally passionate about something. So let's get behind him. So I went to this thing, and then I met loads of DOP. So I met Alan Davial. I met Robbie Greenberg, who's the DOP that shot all the Free Willies. I met the camera operator on all the Home Alone. She's a black woman. I never knew that. You know, and the key person that I met was a German DOP called Karl Walter Lindenlob. And he shot Narnia Prince Caspian. And he shot all the latter episodes of Suits on the TV show. But I met him before he did all of that. And then I said to him, yo, listen, I've been in this place, you know, this LA place, and they're sort of like lighting film sets, and you're seeing the light, and it's just gassing me. I'm just getting goosebumps. Something. I just came up to him and like, look, how do I do this, man? I'll pack up my stuff. I'll sell up in London. I need to do this. Like, this is what I want to do. And then he said to me, you don't need to run anywhere. You know, you're from London. You know, I'm a black, you know, guy with a British accent. I stick out like a sore thumb. You know, like, everyone's looking at me. Like, who is this guy? What's he doing? Like, why does he sound like that? Kind of thing. So it was like, he was like, you're from London, and that's the film hub of Europe. So look for a film school and in London and apply. Went back to my hotel, typed in film school in London. London Film School came up, and, you know, went back home to London, Vodafone. I was applying for it. My dad was encouraging me. Cut a long story short, applied, got an interview, got in, got a bursary, worked at Vodafone while I was at film school, and it's the top 10 best film schools in the world, by the way. It's a London film school. You know, it was like, I just applied on a whim. I didn't know it was great. I didn't know anything. I just saw the website and my spirit started. I usually go with goosebumps. When I get goosebumps, I know that, yeah, like, this is where I'm meant to be. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is what I'm supposed to do. So, yeah, finished that. It wasn't easy. I was working Saturday, Sunday. I was at film school Monday to Friday. The whole 2014, I hardly slept. You know, I was just sort of going at it. Cut a long story short, you know, the film school paid off the rest of my school fees. So I was able to finish my, you know, and it was a £59,000 sterling course, by the way, right? And I didn't have that. Let's be honest. I didn't have 59 grand lying around. And you know, the creative skill set paid off 75% off the bat before I even got in. And the rest that I was struggling with, they saw my potential and they paid every single last penny themselves of the course, and they gave me travel money as well. That's when things like this are happening, that's when you start understanding that this is your calling. Yeah? Like, you're working hard and you're really grinding and you're doing, and you are tired, but doors are flinging open that have no right to be opening, if you know what I mean. Like, it doesn't even make sense why that happened or whatever. Anyway, cut a long story short, graduate from film school now. I've graduated from film school after making two shorts, which is House Girl and a film called Closure, which I made myself while I was at film school. And then I made Haircut. Haircut was the one, mate. Like, Haircut was, you know, I was broke after I quit my job. I was working full time. Can you imagine when, you know, around the times I was making House Girl, my graduation film, like, I was working at Net-a-Porter in customer service. And then I finished film school. I said, I am not doing that, man. Doesn't make sense. So after all this 59 grand and all of that, like, it wasn't me that made those things happen. So I know God has to, he's got me. He has to have got me, kind of thing. So I took the leap of faith. I'll be honest with you. It wasn't easy. I was broke. Everyone's going on holiday. Everyone's getting married. Everyone's driving Mercedes and that. I didn't even have a penny to my name. I'm 27. I can't get a trim. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I'm really grinding it out. But I make Haircut in the pits, in those times, in the depths of my sort of like life. And that changed my life, mate. That film almost got BAFTA nominated, you know, got me an agent, an independent talent. That was the biggest agency in the country. You know, it's got me 3 months later, I was in South Africa shooting Noughts and Crosses. You know, it's like, you know, but unfortunately during that time, mum passed away. So it's kind of like, you know, yeah, that's how I got into film in the industry. I don't know if I've covered it enough because it's so much more, but you know, I'll call this the spine of, you know, sort of how I got into film and how I, you know, how my passion turned into, you know, a career.
I just want to add something to that, because you've spoken about so much there, so many sort of deep and personal things, and, you know, your whole life journey has been, you know, it has been incredible, right? There's been so many, there's been ups and there's been downs. And I just wanted to ask you, what have you done and what do you do to make sure that your well-being is like intact?
Prayer, I swear down. You see, prayer, like, you know, my mom used to say it to me all the time when I was growing up. I was like, come on, man, cut it out, bruv. Like, do you know what I mean? What's this going to do? You know what I mean? You know, to talking to myself. I believed in God and stuff, but not to the extent that I do now, but honestly, like, can I be real with you? What I do now, it's not an easy job. Like, I can't actually explain to anybody the nature of the job that I do. You know, being a film director is answering questions from morning till night and doing it with your chest. You know what I mean? Like, there's hundreds of people asking you questions and you have to continue feeding them with your vision. And honestly, the way I stock up on my vision is just the word of God, man. I read my Bible every morning. I pray every morning. Like, I do this thing where when I'm showering, because, like, you have to find the time to spend with God. Like when I'm showering, I turn on the shower, I play some gospel, and I just break out in tongues. This Holy Spirit take over the words that I'm speaking. And before you know it, man's saying stuff I don't even know. But I've got the image in my head of what I'm praying about, and it's just coming out in whatever's going to come out. And you're just feeling your body just purge itself of whatever's bothering you. Do you see what I'm saying? And then you step into that day. You're confident, like, trust me, like it says in the Bible, seek first the kingdom of God, all your desires will be added upon you. And that's one of the ethos, that's the ethos of my life. You see what I'm saying to you? Sort of like, I go to God first. When things are going well, I go to God first and say thank you. When things are going down the toilet, I go, God help me. Do you know what I mean? I pray consistently through it, before, after. It's all God. Like, you know, what mom left me with before she went was a relationship with God. You see what I'm saying? A solid relationship with Jesus Christ and understanding. And that's what I lean on. That's the pillar in my life. Like, I promise you, like, anyone can, like, I was doing noughts and crosses for BBC One at 28. You know what I mean? This is 28-year-old black guy, you know, bussing low, wearing sliders and a do-rag in Cape Town. Everyone's sort of like, wait, who's this guy? You know what I mean? Then it's sort of like, oh, he's our Block 2 director. And everyone's like double taking, like, oh, snap. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've gone with God. And that's why, again, I go back to my bio on my Instagram, right? Child of God. So logic doesn't apply to me. I'm not going to follow logic. Like, I'm not going to follow things that human beings have decided is the right way to do things or go about life. Because the word of God does not, I follow the word of God. Like, I don't follow logic. You get what I'm saying? Like, the scripture is my aim. I'm aiming for the scripture. You get what I mean? And in order to do so, I have to pray and communicate with God. So that's what keeps me going, man, honestly. And then by doing that, God brings the logical way that sustains me. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, I'm not disregarding logic, but it doesn't apply to me. You see what I'm saying to you? Is that God controls logic. You get what I mean? Like, God holds time, place, logic, you name it. It's all in his hands. So if something needs to be done, now is not far-fetched for a black guy my age to be a director no more. Like, now that's part of logic. Do you get what I'm saying to you? It's like, when you go to God, you create logic. You know what I'm saying to you? As opposed to following it. And that's for me, that's the easy answer, man. Prayer, God, Jesus. You know what I mean? Like, that's me. And I'm not saying everybody has to, but boy, that's my steeds, boy.
Powerful and inspirational, Coves. And just to add to my question, I wanted to ask you, you mentioned about, you know, you just said logic doesn't apply, and, you know, it's now normal almost in a sense to be a black film director. But what was it like on the journey being a black young man that was trying to become a film director in a sort of predominantly white industry?
What you'd expect. You know what I'm saying to you? You go there and people just sort of looking at you, is like, what's this guy on the back? You know what I mean? Like, what, whatever. You know, you make a film and then you just have to keep proving yourself to people. But I didn't prove myself to no one. I just always just made, I'm sure I proved myself to myself. You know what I mean? As long as I know I can make films, like, something just told me that everyone's going to follow suit. Like, oh, you know what I used to do? I'm going to be honest and transparent here. Like, I used to meet people back in the day and stuff, and then they don't really take notice of me, or they don't really, like, oh, meet Colvin, like, yeah. In my head, there's a voice that used to go in my head, and I said, this person's going to regret this. Like, this person is going to regret this. And, like, every time, like, I used to go through experiences where, like, my, you know, my ego or pride was, you know, knocked, whether it was right or wrong for me to feel this way, my spirit always used to say that, bruv, this person's going to U-turn, man. They're going to come back around. Like, I knew it. Like, I don't know what it was. I just don't know. Like, and this is the same energy that I felt when I was younger, and I said to mom, I'm glad to be a millionaire. Like, I can't describe the logic behind it, but I just knew. Do you get what I mean? I didn't know it was going to look like Noughts and Crosses. I didn't know it was going to look like the way it is now. Do you get what I mean? But I just knew that, like, this was all. And furthermore, let me be honest with you, it hasn't stopped. It hasn't stopped. Like, the journey goes on. You know what I mean? The journey goes on. Now, what I've been able to do is commission 5 black writer directors. 4 of them are black women, right? One of them, I spoke to 3 of them yesterday. One of them, her name's Jessica Magai. She's from Thamesmead as well, like myself. She's 23 years old, Nigerian girl. If you see the film she's made, guys, yeah, you just realize that in my proposal, right, to do this initiative, I'm doing it with Carl Loco, who's a business partner of mine, and my friend Dollar, who I grew up with. You know what I mean? Like, Dollar, you know what I mean? We used to get in trouble and stuff back in the, you know what I mean? Like, we're all running this thing together with Sky. Like, I was going to do it anyway, but, you know, Sky came along and saw the proposal and they wanted in. Get what I mean? But in that proposal, what I said is, when my trajectory as a filmmaker, I was a 28-year-old black guy, finished making this short film set in the hood, South London, about a stick-up in a barbershop. And, you know, it almost got BAFTA nominated. Like, do you know what I'm saying to you? And you know, the director of Harry Potter, you know, David Yates chose that as his favorite film on, you know, the scheme that I made it on. You know, and now he's my mentor and wants to exec all my stuff. And in my proposal, I said, you know what? And then I was doing TV long form, like, that the budget for Haircut was 14 grand. Noughts and Crosses was millions per episode. 3 months later, I've been flung into that world, right? And I wrote in my proposal, that wasn't a fluke. And it can happen 5 more times. And now let me show you. Do you understand? And now that's when the Sky dropped the money and the resources and the support and have been amazing. Honestly, I found collaborators for life in Sky Studios as well. You know, Sky TV is like, I spoke to Cameron Roach, who was the head of Sky Drama at the time. And this all happened like during lockdown, Black Lives Matter times. We had a conversation and they just went at it. And it's still happening now. We shot 4 of the films. Like this started as a pipe dream with my accountant, lawyer, assistant. I was just talking. And that was happened. And to be honest with you, like what I love is that God gave me so much courage that even though my face didn't fit, I said, A, it's going to fit. And other people's faces are going to fit as well. Simple. And that's why I say logic don't apply to me or DBK Studios. So that means that logic don't apply to those 5 people I've commissioned right now, because that's under DBK Studios and anybody else who comes through next. You know what I mean? So as I stick with God, I just want everybody to keep watching what God's doing. It's not me. I'm a vessel. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, like I said, this hair's flesh. Like, this ain't some sort of, you know, I'm not a God. Do you know what I mean? This is flesh. But the spirit within me, it says, greater is he that's in you than he who's of the world. You get what I'm saying? And honestly, is he who's in me that's the only person that I really listen to. Unless you convince he who's in me, forget it. You can tell me what you like. You can have whatever PhD you like. You could have won 10, 20 million Oscars. Unless you convince he who's in me, I'm not listening. I'm sorry. I'm not. That's just that. So.
And we've actually had convos, Kobe and I, separate convos about this. I think deep a few months ago, we spoke about something like this because, you know, you always say you follow, you know, God's guidance, and it's not about right now where you're at. It's not about how much money as such is being presented to you. It's if you've been led to do that, you know, if you've been, you know, guided to that. And I think that's amazing to have such a strong conviction. But please do go ahead, Jeremiah.
Yeah, no, definitely. I wanted to take it back a little bit.
Let's do it.
Have a look inside your short films.
Okay, let's. Jeez, like, your guy. Yeah, listen, Jeremiah, like, you know, you're going deep still. You're always going to the core of the matter.
No, it's important. It's important because I feel everything starts at the roots, right? And laying that foundation.
Sure, sure.
And there's one thing I picked on a lot earlier on in the interview.
Yeah.
And it was that point at your A-levels where you had like opposites of the spectrum. You sort of had media studies and then you studied all the way to like sociology.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it gets to your short films, I've noticed that you kind of focus on real like
sociological issues. It was going to get
your haircut, drugs and guns, house, girl, class, conflict, abuse, enclosure. So what are the reasons why you decided to focus on those issues? And how did you get such big issues across such a short period of time? Because we're talking about maybe like 15 minutes here.
Max.
How could you fit all of that within 15 minutes max?
Yeah, yeah. So basically, you know what it is? It's like, I've really held myself accountable to story, right? So like, over lockdown, I did a few Zooms for people who wanted to get into the industry, whether that's writer, directors. Funny enough, one of them I commissioned and she's now shot her film. So, you know, praise God for that. But I did a Zoom talking about story and how to write it and the important components of story. Because look, you can write a million pages and not hit those components. You're wasting your time. You know what I mean? Like, there's a way to communicate story to people, which is based on Aristotle, which is based on science, which has been researched for hundreds of years. Like, you can come up with your own ethos, but you're not going to enjoy it. You know, 1,000 years later, someone's going to use it. Do you know what I mean? To communicate with people. That's not now. But I taught them a story. So it's about having a character. So every film is about a person, right, who has an obstacle, right? No, sorry, a person who has a goal, right? A person who wants something, who has obstacles and has to get over those obstacles to get to their goal. That's every single last film, right? And short films is about telling the bare bones of those stories, right? Getting the core of those stories. You see what I'm saying? Like, Haircut, for example. What's that about, Kobe? It's about a barber who wanted bigger things for himself, if you know what I mean. He sees people in his community coming into his barbershop all the time and going on to do big things. So he wants bigger things for himself. But that very day, he learns that his importance is exactly where he is now. You see what I'm saying to you? Like, he doesn't need to go and be a big reggae star to, you know, be important in the world. Actually, you're being way more important by serving all these young boys in the community and pouring your knowledge and leadership into their heads for them to go forth and do great things. Do you get what I mean? So it's like, that was said in 15 minutes. You see what I'm saying to you? Sort of, and also in films, you have to choose the times that will tell the story of everything else. Like, it's a very strategic approach. Like, you have to display things on screen which will comment on things that are off screen. If you, for example, in Haircut, there's a moment where he sticks up the gun, he said, where's my bag, then the barber calls the guy that's taken the bag out the shop, right? And then now that we figure out that the guy's gonna come back and bring the bag, he says, okay, sit in the chair, let me give you a trim while we're waiting. So he sits in the chair, then we cut to black, then we come back as he's finishing off the trim. We didn't need to see him, man, trimming his hair. Like, you know what I mean? No one cares about that. Do you see what I'm saying to you? But what we do care about is, okay, there's been a time where he was just cutting his hair and we're waiting for the bag, but then we come back into the story and see how everybody feels. So the first thing you see me do is you see the main person that we need to worry about, who's our lead character, the barber. Then you see the obstacle, the kid with the gun in the chair. Then you see how everybody feels about that. You get close-ups all around the shop, and that's all silence. There's not a word being said. Do you know what I'm saying to you? All you're doing is showing that. You feel me? And then already, you've now been re-engaged into this world, and we've made up for the, what, maybe hour and a half off-screen time of cutting hair. Do you know what I mean? We know how they felt that whole time. Now, let's get on with the story. Do you get what I mean? And then eventually, the next big thing that happens is that, you know, the radio's playing, and then the radio presenter's asking a really intelligent question, which this kid in the chair answers. Then you're like, oh, rah, okay. So I didn't expect this guy to know stuff like that. So then the barber echoes that sentiment. It's like, rah, so if you're so smart, why are you doing all this? Then somebody's trying to call the police. His phone drops. Bam, the danger's back straight away. Do you see what I'm saying to you? Then he sort of gets up. Then all of a sudden, do you get what I'm saying? So it's kind of like, you know, for me, there's two components here, and this is what I said to everybody in the Zooms. The first things first, is story, right? The story comes next, like, just below God. Not even just below, but comes below God. Do you know what I mean? There's God, because I'm a Christian. Not everybody is a Christian, so I can't tell everybody that. I can for myself, but I can't tell them. It has to be like that for them. But there's God, then there's story. If you're a filmmaker and story don't come in that place, just forget it. You know what I mean? Like, you're wasting your time. It's all about story. Right? And then, so you have to learn how to tell a story, which is what I told you guys, about a person, goal, obstacle, and decisions. That's what stories are about, decision making. And then the next thing you have to consider is what type of story to tell. Now, when I was at film school, I met Tim Bevan. So Tim Bevan is the CEO, the co-founder of Working Title Films, which is a subsidiary of Universal Studios in this country. So they make Mr. Bean, Les Miserables, Bridget Jones's Diaries, like all the top titles that, you know, are sort of like British, you know, it comes from Working Title. So I just emailed him on a whim when I was in film school. I emailed like 100 producers, and he got back to me, and somebody else called me into his office, which is strange as hell. I just went in there and I met this guy, and he gave me a gem. And I promise you, this is one of the biggest reasons as well why I feel like I started to pierce through this industry, because he goes to me like, don't try and fit in. Don't do it. Do you know what I mean? It's like, don't make Bridget Jones's Diaries. Like, you don't know that world. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you come from a place that I don't have access to, and everybody else in this world doesn't have access to. So tell that story, make people happy, sad, cry, laugh, all of those things, and you'll be onto a winner. First film I made since then was House Girl, then Haircut. Then I was doing a BBC One drama. Like, you know what I mean? And House Girl was a story that my mom kept telling me over and over and over and over and over and over and over again about these house girls that her someone she was close with in Ghana, like an auntie of hers, used to, you know, maltreat. She'd tell me the story all the time. And Haircut, I went to my barber's in Plumstead, and something similar happened. It wasn't cocaine and guns, but there was one youth that came in, he's like, it was on tag or whatever. And, you know, I came in after he dropped the bag in it. I just saw the part where he came back for the bag. And then my barber was kind of like, bruv, the bag's not here. What are you talking about, bruv? Are you going to be leaving, like, weed in my flipping barbershop, bruv? It's my place of business. But my barber, he's not a joke, man. Like, he's not a prick. So he took his scissors kind of thing. Like, yeah? Like, what is it kind of thing? Like, are you on it? Then obviously the guy was like, all right, cool, say nothing. Watch when I come back. So I remember that all of us in the shop just thinking, and I was with my boy, who knew the guy who took the bag out the shop. right? So my boy must have called him. And then the guy was like, I dashed it. You know what I mean? These signs, yeah, right. You probably even smoked it or you sold it on kind of thing. But all of those components were there and that never left my head. So what Tim Bevan said to me, he said to me, tell the story that nobody else can tell, that you've experienced or somebody else has experienced, right? And build characters that you know. Like when you're building characters and stories, base them on somebody. Like you can't just create a character from the top of your head. You have to embed it in some sort of reality, which is what referencing is, if you know what I mean. So yeah, like there is a way to get those, you know, so much story into 15 minutes when you know the components of story, like when you know what a story is. And can I be honest with you? The best storytellers can do the 15 minutes because thereafter, when you go and make a 2-hour film, rest assured, everything on that screen is super important. Super. And when you're making short films, like you have to cut off your left arm, like kind of thing, because you can't fit everything in there. You know what I mean? There's some beautiful shots, beautiful performances, beautiful whatever that just doesn't fit within the story mechanisms that you've set. You get what I mean? So I don't know if I've answered your question again, but.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. There was one of them I wanted to focus on in particular.
Yeah.
You shot House Girl in West Africa.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long way to go to make a short film.
Trust me.
You know what I'm saying? So why? My question is, why were you so keen to make it there?
Mm-hmm.
And how do your African roots play a part in the way you imagined your future?
You know what? First and foremost, I'm 31. By 35, you're gonna find me in Ghana, bro. I'll be honest with you. Like my future, yeah. You know, I've my. You know, this is if I go into that, that'll be the rest of the podcast. But you know what I mean? It's like my future plans lie in Africa, and you know, sort of reinstating the land as what it's supposed to be, using what's already there and what I've got from, you know, being raised as a European, if you know what I mean. Because you know, there's good stuff in everywhere you go. Do you know what I mean? So it's about using that, taking that, mixing those two. And you know what I mean, cracking on with it. But House Girl for me was the introduction to that, if you know what I mean. Because, you know, to be honest with you, I hadn't been to Ghana for 18 years before I decided to shoot this film. You know, like I was sitting in film school, right? So it's an international film school. You get people from South America, India, China. You get them from everywhere, right? So they're making their grad films. Some people are shooting their film in the Amazon rainforest, getting some shots on the water and that. Then you're seeing the forest in the background. I'm saying, I am not going back to the block to make a grad film, fam. No chance. You know what I'm saying to you? I'm just seeing all these beautiful landscapes and stuff. What am I going back to do? Cancer states. So everyone's seeing that stuff. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, that's not ginger in my spirit. So I said to myself, oh, like, man, I have to go to Ghana, man. I have to go see what's popping there. So I booked my own ticket. Like, I kept bothering my parents. They were dragging their feet. So I was just like, you know what? I'm going myself. Booked a ticket, went to Ghana for 2 weeks. And I just explored the land. When I got back, I didn't know where the money was coming from. I didn't know who the crew was. I didn't know how it was going to be done. I said, I'm shooting in Ghana. I said, I am making this film in Ghana. I'm making House Girl. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to make it in Ghana. And it was that crazy faith again, because honestly speaking, the budget for that film was about 23 to 25K. Not once at any given moment was there 25 grand in my account. Not once. I was just rolling with the punches, telling people to invoice me, trying to take out bank loans and get rejected, doing the Kickstarter, you know, while working full time at Net-A-Porter. Like I was just killing myself. I can't even lie to you, man. Like literally 24 hours around the clock, I was just going at it because I just knew that it's going to happen. You know, when you know something's going to happen, you throw everything. You don't think of risk anymore. Like you don't think of consequences. You just think this thing has to happen. Like it's too strong on my spirit. So I did it. And you know what? While I was writing the film, the beauty of that film is without knowing, I followed Tim Bevan's advice again, because the film that I've shot now is the story Mum told me. But the next thing that you have to do is like, so Mum told me a story which builds the world, the components, Ghana, House Girls, da 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 da. But the next thing you have to consider is character, like I said. That's what story is about. So who is this character that's going to take us through this world? And I can't tell the story of a Ghanaian person in Ghana because I'm not that person. So what did I do? I used my experiences of that 2 weeks to guide myself through that story. Like for example, at the beginning of House Girl, you see the girl in the car and that, da, 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 then she's sort of looking around Ghana, voyeuristic type of vibes. Then the driver just leaves the car there, runs out. then someone comes to sell a wall and she's kind of like, oh snap, like, what do you want kind of thing. And, you know, he's running there. Then you're seeing the driver argue with someone, like, go away, you know, whatever. Da-da-da-da. Then he gets in the car and then continues driving. That happened to me. That happened to me. Do you get what I mean? And I just recreated it. Do you get what I mean? Like, and I put the story through a mixed race girl who's half Ghanaian, who went back to Ghana to find out about herself. Do you get what I'm saying? And actually, I went for those 2 weeks thinking I wanted there to make a film, but I was finding out about myself. Do you get what I mean? So this whole film is embedded in reality from beginning to end. And the message and the lesson behind it is also embedded in reality. And I think you're spot on, Jeremiah. Like, I was going to try and get to it somehow, but that correlation between sociology to the types of films that I make now is like, that blows, because I used to think, why on earth would I do so? Like, I don't know if, like, I haven't said this to Kelly in uni, but I used to think to myself, like, why am I doing this course, bruv? Like, this is a waste of my time. Like, what, like, I want to make films, I want to shoot stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, why am I doing this course? And now I know exactly why. Because on top of the you know, knowing story and how to structure it and etc., I know society, I know sociology, and I know what to explore, if you know what I mean, because I studied it.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. It's crazy how something you could have been doing, like, let's say, like 10 years ago, or even longer than a decade, it only really kicks in years later.
Facts.
And it's just important to have that foundation laid. Because you never know when it can, you know, sort of kick in.
That's a fact. And that's why it's like, it ties in with the whole nightmare. Like, the first thing I remember saying on this podcast is that, okay, back in the day when, you know, I was with my friends and hanging around and the trouble used to come and mad things used to happen. Like, the reality of the matter is I've seen weird stuff, like stuff that I wish I didn't see. You know what I mean? Like, it's but can I be honest with you? Like, my how do I put this? The way I move in this industry is without thinking about risk. Like, I feel like I've been in such high-stakes situations that, like, the things that people are scared of in this game don't even occur to me. You know what I mean? Like, oh, don't talk to this guy like that, or don't challenge this guy, or do, like, what are you talking about? Like, you see what I'm saying to you? At the end of the day, like, none of you people scare me here. Like, you can cancel me if you need to. I didn't come in with you guys. I came in with God. But that confidence, that bold confidence, comes from being exposed to this stuff on the streets. You know what I'm saying to you? It comes from seeing things you didn't want to see. Like, those times, it was traumatizing. That's not what my brain wanted to see. Like, I wasn't that guy. I wasn't like, oh, front line, da-da-da-da. But I was always there for some flipping reason. Do you know what I'm saying to you? And then you have to do something you don't want to do. And then you have to start compromising yourself. And do you know what I mean? So I feel like at that time, I felt like, yeah, that's horrible. How can you go through such a thing? I wouldn't wish that on anyone. But I'll be honest with you, that played a massive part in me getting to where I've got to this quickly. 100%. I wasn't risking. I didn't think of getting a job to pay my bills. Bruv, I was happy drowning in debt if I need to get this done. And now, man, I don't owe a penny to nobody.
You know, that's really important what you said. Because, again, when I was growing up, I almost felt like I was living in between two different worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So even when it gets to you going to like film school,
mm-hmm.
mixing with people who can afford to pay 59K for,
exactly.
for a course and whatever, it would even be interesting to know how you felt inside, knowing that, cool, I'm around some of these people, the diversity here isn't even great.
Mm-hmm.
I've come from this environment. None of these people can relate to me.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, what you said that was really inspirational was the fact that you take some of your experiences to overcome fear.
Facts.
Do you know what I'm saying? So how did that feel for you being in that sort of environment? Almost being between two different worlds. You're now in film school. Mm-hmm. And again, many people from what I would say is a place that both us come from,
mm-hmm.
they wouldn't necessarily get into film school. Mm-mm. Or even think about going to film school.
Mm.
But how did that feel when both of the worlds sort of collided together?
It's difficult because, look, I can't lie. At film school, I didn't fit in straight off the bat. Some people ask me, why are you wearing tracksuits? Like, why do you wear trainers every day? Like, shut up. You know what I mean? It's kind of like after a while, when they're going to eat lunch and spend £20 in Benugo's or whatever that restaurant is, like, I have to go elsewhere and try and find £1-2 meal deal in Tesco. You get what I'm saying? And something, it got to the stage where they'll pick who the best filmmakers are, you know, and it's everyone has to vote for like what film gets made every time. And etc. And my films never got chosen, right? Actually, you know what? One of my boys got murdered in my area, right? At the end of the first year. So you know what? When it was time to choose who does what, you know, for the next term, I had to cut. I had to leave and I had to go because, my, you know, this guy, we had to go do the vigil and all that kind of stuff. Go back the next day. They picked all the good roles. They picked all the good films. They left me a sound and production. You know what I mean? Like, no one cared about me. They didn't care that someone got murdered. Like, they would probably think, well, I'm not shocked. Like, you know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, that's what you should be expected from this guy. So I didn't fit in there. And in my area, let's be honest, like, it got to a point where I was really isolated at one point because, you know, some of the people that I grew up with, you know, weren't really making my life really that any easier, even though I was going through it. You know what I mean? Like, mentally, I was going through it those times. Like, I can't try and paint this as an entire fairy tale because a lot of depression started creeping in. Do you know what I mean? But, you know, it's like I just couldn't relate to nobody. Do you know what I mean? I was just caught in the middle at one stage. And there's times when, you know, some of my friends were laughing at me and stuff because I used to do like screenings. I'll make a film and I'll do a big deal. And obviously I'm doing Kickstarters. You have to humble yourself because you're asking people for money. And in my head is thinking, bro, stop begging, bro. Like, you know what I mean? But that's the only option I had. People laughing about that. Like, oh yeah, not him again. Come to ask for more money. And, you know, oh yeah, not another screening. Rare. But let's have it right. They didn't know. When you don't have it, I can't blame them in it. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you don't have the knowledge, how can I come and say you're wicked? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're not. At the end of the day, as soon as they saw the truth, some of them have been fully behind me and have contributed to, you know, accelerating where I'm at now. Do you get what I mean? And let's have it right. In film school, not friend or shade, but I'm the only one working from my cohort. Do you know what I mean? They could have chosen whoever was the best filmmaker in the world and disregarded me and rare tear tear. But let's be honest, like, from that, the year that I started, the class I was in, like, I'm the only one that's working, not one of many. Do you know what I mean? I'm the only one. And I graduated from film school end of 2016, beginning of 2017. By the end of 2018, I was doing a BBC One drama. So the reality of the matter is, it wasn't easy, but you just have to handle it with as much grace and with God as possible. That's it. Like, and it's not going to be perfect. Sometimes I flip out. Sometimes I do things I'm not supposed to, but I'm a human being and I can forgive myself as well because, you know, honestly speaking, not a lot of people could have gone through what I went through. You know what I mean? I put myself through hell to do this, but I didn't need to. I think I learned the lesson as well. I think maybe at the time I needed to break certain boundaries and barriers. It's like going against the grain don't feel good. Do you see what I'm saying to you? It's like going against the wind don't feel good, but then you build, when you keep going in this direction with so much force, then you build up a current, then the wind starts blowing in that direction now. Do you see what I'm saying to you? And then now no one can push against that. Do you get what I'm saying? So one thing I could always say is, like, I always knew God. Like, I always had a relationship. In hindsight, like, you just look back and I just knew him. 100%. Like, a lot of my decisions are testament of that.
So let's get into noughts and crosses now, Kobe. Thank you for that. But I remember when you came to the studio, do you remember, in 2018 and you played your haircut?
Yes.
And then we watched through all the short films. We watched, you know, House Girl and all that. So, yeah, it's just been amazing hearing about your journey.
Thank you.
So in Noughts and Crosses, the Mallory Blackman book that you just showed us, the story deals with prejudice and inequality. So how does equality on screen play a role in achieving equality in the real world? And did directing the series make you more or less optimistic for equality in the future? And this kind of goes back to Jeremiah's points about, you know, your films and sociology. And
look, the Noughts and Crosses couldn't have been a better first job for me. You know what I'm saying to you? It's like you said, sociology, equality, like, they gave the job to a black guy, if you know what I mean. And can I be honest with you, in those meetings, I didn't deviate from myself. I was just myself. I said exactly what was on my mind. As well, I went as far as to say to because I was in a meeting with two of the execs from the production company and one exec from the BBC. Right, and we had the meeting in the BBC building, and I just remember saying, you know what, I don't even remember reading the book, I'll be real, but, you know, I've read the script and it's great. But that's the person that I am. You feel what I'm saying? Like, you either take me or you leave me, bro. Like, you know what I mean? I don't want to come here under false pretenses, then that's when I'm suffering while working. I don't want to do that. And I've always felt that way. But once I got in, honestly, it's changed my life, man. I see everything differently. Do you know what I'm saying to you? Like, I look at equality in ways that
you know, how do I put this? I look at equality as something that is achieved through love. It's not achieved through any kind of conflict. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, if something's wrong and you try to deal with it with conflict, you're just adding to the problem. You're not helping. Do you get what I mean? And actually, what this has helped me to do is being able to understand what love is. You see what I'm saying to you? And love is in the Bible. You know what I mean? Like, there's a description of love in the Bible, and it's patience, it's grace, you know, it's all of those kinds of things. So I think for me, you know, as a person working on these things, working on noughts and crosses, like, it says God is love, and this story is about love and it being protected. Do you get what I'm saying to you? So, like, it's proper strange. And you know what it says in the Bible? It says, guard your heart above all things, right? Because it will run the course of your life. Do you get what I'm saying to you? And this whole story is about two people guarding their heart. Do you get what I'm saying to you? And for me, finding that connection, right, into the word of God is what makes my ideas just flow out. You know what I'm saying to you? Now, I know what to say to who. I know what to say to the actors. I know what to say to costume. I know what to say to thing. And it's such a mystical experience that, you know, I'm not saying that what I'm doing, someone's going to watch it and say, oh, yeah, he did this and he did that. It becomes a complete experience that is going to sink into your spirit. And you know what? It's the most beautiful way, because such things go beyond your conscious, your conscience, like your brain. It goes beyond what your brain, it goes beyond logic. You see what I'm saying to you? Because your brain's here ready to, but when it's so cohesively embedded in, you know what I'm saying to you, in God, the brain can't comprehend what's coming, and it goes round there and into the spirit. I'm telling you, like honestly speaking, I feel like this season, because I'm about to start shooting this now. We start shooting on the 7th of June. That's why I'm in Cape Town. So, like, honestly, I'm really excited about this season. Do you know what I mean? Like, this season goes even further, because the love is challenged even more. Do you get what I'm saying to you? And we go for it. Do you see what I'm saying to you? And you know what? The message, you know, at the end of the day is that love conquers all for me. Like, that's my ethos in life. Love conquers all. So, yeah, man, Noughts and Crosses is just a beautiful encapsulation of that. And the fact that it's about a black and a white world, Noughts and Crosses, you know, but it's about a black and a white person. Like, that is just so beautiful for me, because, you know, it's about people being different. And it's not just about the presentation and skin color. It's about the culture and the spirit and the way people do things. And this book just Mary Lee Blackman just wrote a masterpiece, man. Flipping out. Like, visualizing that book gives me goosebumps. Like, the plaster that's brown rather than beige. You know, people curling their hair in society rather than straightening it. You see what I'm saying to you? People darkening their skin rather than skin lightening cream. You know what I mean? Like, it's nuts. You know what I mean? And just to have the privilege of exploring this with my sociological background and, you know, all, and my faith in Christ, you see what I'm saying to you? You know, God being, you know, love, God is love. It's like, how could this project is perfect? Like, honestly, there's no better project for me to work on. And by the grace of God, the first time around, there were 6 episodes and I directed the last 3. This season, I'm directing the whole thing.
Amazing. Congrats, bro.
Thank you.
I love how you just went through your analogy of love as well. It nicely leads me on to the next question. And you know, Cobes, we're so, like, aligned, aren't we? Like, everything you say, I'm just with you.
Yeah, it's just there.
But so, speaking of love and, like, this beautiful love story that Seffi and Callum had, when it comes to your directing generally and for the future, what would you rather be doing? Would you rather be directing more action-based things or more sort of romance-based
things? You know what? I'll be honest with you, drama is my thing. Like, that's what, you know, socioeconomic dramas. And actually, for me, I'm not someone who stays within one genre. I use different genres to tell a story. Like, for example, in Haircut, you know, it's a thriller. You can call it a thriller. But the first scene, you know, before, you know, the danger comes and the kid comes and drops the bag behind the fridge, it's like a comedy. You know, it's not like with dramas, you go in close-ups and you analyze people's faces and attention. But with comedies, you pull out, there's 3 people in the shot laughing, there's 2 people here laughing, there's 4 people here laughing, busting jokes. And that was the first scene. So that was comedy. Then after that, there was thriller. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, it's all about understanding the genre and their principles that they come with and using it, you know, in your film. But the arc, and what I mean by arc is the point A to point B, and the message behind it is always dramatic. And drama is always about internal conflict. And that's what people always need to learn. Like, drama is always about the protagonist, the main person we're following, finding out that the best way to get over their obstacles to defeat themselves. Do you know what I mean? There's a mentality of theirs that's upholding this obstacle, and actually they have to go and deal with it there rather than dealing with its projection. Do you know what I mean? And that's what every drama is about. Like, honestly, you can unpick every drama, and that everyone always has to get over that thing over there in order to conquer this thing over here. Do you get what I'm saying? And that for me is a profound message in life. Do you get what I mean? Accountability. It says in the word that good and evil come hand in hand, right? And it's people who aren't aware of the fact that good and evil can come out of you are the most dangerous people, because you have to be able to put your finger. It says you can't harvest the wheat without the weed. You have to harvest them all together. You see what I'm saying to you? And then you go and you pick out the weed from the wheat, and then you do what you will with the wheat. You get what I'm saying? But for me, dramas are about accountability. It's about, okay, cool, we've now harvested all these things, and here's the weed and here's the wheat. But it's about picking out the weeds. You see what I'm saying? And I believe that in life, like, I struggle to get on with people that can't pick out the weed from their wheat, man. Like, I stay as far away from those people as possible. And they can present as these normal people, but it's about the intricacies of their person and how it affects their micro decisions and their day to day. And when you're in the word and there's a certain discernment over, like, you know what I mean? You just see all these things clear as day. So for me, that's what my films are about. It's about exploring human form, right? And I can do that spiritually. I can do that sociologically. I can do that mentally. I can do that physically. I can do that. I can keep going. You know what I mean? Like, I've had experiences in all those departments to be able to completely tell a human story.
Something else that draws me to Noughts and Crosses are like guest appearances, some more like famous high profile people involved, like even Stormzy got involved at a certain point. Do you approach work differently when you've got like a star on set?
Both
on screen and off screen. So even in terms of like people who are quite popular in the film industry. When you're on set with them, do you like approach work differently?
Nope, I approach it all the same. So I've just finished Top Boy. So I've worked with Kano, I've worked with Ashley Waters, I've worked with Lil Sims, I've worked with Jasmine Jobson, I've worked with Michael Ward, I've worked with them all. They're rock stars. Let's have it right. You see what I'm saying to you? Those people, if they walk down the street, more time people are stopping to say something. Do you get what I mean? But you know what? I think I've been able to work with all of them very organically. Do you get what I mean? Stormzy's the same. Like, that guy is just, when you meet him, you can just tell why he is where he is in life. You know what I'm saying? Like, honestly, like, he just landed in Cape Town and humbly, he's like, look, I'm here to learn. I don't know anything about this stuff, so help me out. How can you not want to help that person? You know what I mean? Like, that's what it is for me. But I approached him like an actor. You know, it's not about demeaning him because he's never done it. I said, look, you are in artistic form, right? And it's very transferable, so I'm going to treat you as an artist. You get what I mean? And that's exactly how we got to where we got to. And to be honest, this season, we got some more juicy cameos for your head tops. Yeah. So, and we got two juicy ones. I'm not going to reveal who because I'll get in trouble, but you feel me? Like, we got some juicy ones that I know that a lot of people will resonate with. So,
what advice would you give to someone who's interested in getting into film? But they haven't necessarily been able to go down the route of the sort of normal route that you would need to go down to get into film. It's like maybe like attending film school. It's like, even me, for example, I'm doing a script writing course at the University of East Anglia, like an online course and whatever. But I've literally seen hundreds of people who are like interested in getting into screenplay, but they haven't been able to like afford film school.
Books.
What advice would you give to them?
Books, bro. Books. Trust me. Like, there's information everywhere. And actually, the only advice I'll give to people is that, A, just believe in yourself and persevere. That's it. Just be yourself. Like, if you try to transform and try to fit in, you've lost. Let's forget it. Because the thing is, what I mean by you've lost is that you might get in because you've transformed, but now they own you. Just what I'm saying to you is, like, you're just gonna be tap dancing to the industry's beat for the rest of your life, right? But when you're yourself and you persevere, you'll find your tribe. And when I say persevere, I don't mean just keep trying to get in. It's about educating, it's about learning and filling your head with as much knowledge as possible, whether that's shadowing, humbling yourself to shadow, humbling yourself to read books. Like, bruv, if you can go and clean the floor on a film set, you should take it, because you'll go and see how it all works and see how people move. And it's not going to be easy, but in the same breath, you're going to be able to immerse it. You're going to be able to expose yourself to the world that you want to attain. But you can do that. The advice that I'd give is be yourself and persevere. Easy doors. First and foremost, I don't even want to go into the rest, because the rest is neither here nor there. Do you know what I mean? You could read a trillion books and it still won't work out if you don't believe in yourself. But to be fair, for me, we call it self-belief. But again, greater is he that is in me than he is of the world. So it's not me that I'm believing in. It's he that's in me, bro. You know what I mean? He that's in me, ready to take over the world and that. You feel me?
There's only so long that self-belief can last for, right? Without having, you know, a deeper sort of connection, right?
Of course. Because why? What? Why do you believe in yourself? Why are you more special than the next man? You see what I'm saying to you? It's God. It's God. And that's why, like, stuff like boundaries and stuff is super important. You're not protecting yourself. You're protecting greater as he does in you, bro. You know what I mean? So that's why these days, like, I don't feel bad. I don't get swayed by emotionalism and all this kind of stuff. It's like, bro, as long as I know that I'm protecting the God in me, please, no matter how anybody feels, it's beyond my concern, bro. That's between them and God still.
Power, power, power. You know, just to round up, this has been amazing. Thank you again.
I've enjoyed it.
We'd just love to know what your dreams are for the future. What's like the ultimate dream for you?
Right, so I've already started DBK Studios, my production company, but that is called DBK Studio strategically for a purpose. It's not a production company, it's a studio. Now, I'm not going to say where, because it's between me and God right now. Do you know what I mean? And obviously my collaborators, but I've already identified where the studio will be. It's on ends, that's all I'm going to say. Do you know what I mean? But we're going to build a big studio. I'm talking about same as Tyler Perry Studios and what you find in Hollywood. It's going to be in the hood, do you know what I mean? And we're going to employ people from the hood and, you know, surrounding areas to get into the film industry and start learning from the best of the best. So that's my dream. Like DBK Studios, like I've seen where the sign's going to go already. You know, I've seen the approach. I know what department's going to be where. Like, I've seen it all. And that's one of my big dreams, right? And knowing God, I've said 5 years, but you never know. By next year, you guys could be, you know what I'm saying, seeing a madness. So that's a dream. I want to start to change the face of the industry. Like, bad practices that people have upheld will vanish because of the machine that we're building. It won't be accepted around here. But also the types of faces that to expect to be film directors is going to change. We're not going to expect a middle-aged white man anymore. Do you see what I'm saying to you? Like, you will see a 23-year-old black woman bossing the set. And that's exactly what people saw with the last film we shot. Do you know what I'm saying? And her film looks cracking. Do you know what I mean? We're going to see, you know, Asians. Do you know what I mean? We're going to see all types of people doing their thing. We're going to see integration. We're going to see love ruling. Do you see what I'm saying? And that's my dream, man. My dream is to continue to use my gifts and endeavors to continue to push love. Do you see what I'm saying? To continue to push the message that I so highly believe in through Christ Jesus, which is like, love your neighbor. Do you know what I mean? It's like, look, if we all love our neighbor, you just start to get a currency of love flowing everywhere. Do you know what I mean? And really, that's DBK Studios. Like I said, that ethos extends into Africa, starting from Ghana, where I'm from. We're going to build a system which is going to spread into the rest of Africa and start to make Africa a continent which is self-sustainable. You know what I mean? And can start collaborating with other lands as opposed to being, you know, manipulated and, you know, and all the other stuff. You know what I mean? As history shows. So yeah, those are my dreams. And it's just to live a peaceful, God-fearing life, man. I just want to stay at the bosom of Christ. I don't really want to, like, all these things I'm talking about is great and stuff, but I haven't felt better in any other place than the presence of God. Do you know what I mean? And my dream is that I just stay there, man. Because honestly, I feel light when I'm there. Like, my spirit flies when I'm there. Do you know what I mean? I forgive everybody when I'm there. Do you know what I mean? And really, like, I want to be able to preserve that space. And for me and my family and my kids and their kids and their kids and their kids, I want to build a generation of wealth, excellence, and God-fearing. That's my dream.
Powerful, bro. I think one final question. What would you say to your 15-year-old self? So going back in time, the guy who wanted to become a footballer, the guy who then wanted to become a millionaire, what would you say? What piece of advice would you leave with him?
Go to God and let go. Let go and let him just do whatever. Trust me. Just let go to God, and where the wind blows, go in that direction. That's
amazing.
Simple. Yeah. Just go to God, go to the foot of the cross, and just let the wind blow. And wherever the wind blows is where you should walk.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Kobe. It's been an amazing podcast.
I've loved it.
Yeah, it's been amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your story, going into DL. And yeah, it's been a pleasure.
No, honestly.
Yeah, Kelly.
It's been a massive one. Me and Kelly take long walks anywhere.
have long, deep chats.
So no, I've really enjoyed it. Thanks for inviting me on as well. It means a lot. Honestly, I'm humbled.
Well, that's it. Episode number one in the bag. If you enjoyed being with us today and you'd like to join us again, please subscribe on your podcast player of choice.
And for more information about dreaming in a nightmare and to find out what you can do about tackling inequality in your society, sign up to our newsletter at www.dreaminginanightmare.com or follow us on Instagram at dreaminginanightmare.
Well, thank you, everyone. I've been, and still am, Kelly Okogu.
And I am, as always, Jeremiah Emanuel.
Dreaming in a Nightmare is a Bukomi original production. The executive producer was Richard Kilgariff. No, yeah, it was.